Welcome to Art Talk Live. I'm your host, Julia Noyes, from the Noyes Art Gallery. I'm interviewing artists for your listening pleasure. Haven't you ever wondered why artists do what they do or what inspires them? So here we are, live, to give you the inside scoop.
Hey, good morning. Welcome to Art Talk Live. This is Lynette Fast, and I'm in Noyes Art Gallery today, as I am every second Friday of the month, recording our Art Talk Live podcast. I hope that you might join us either in the gallery or definitely go to kzum.org/Art Talk Live and pick up all of our episodes. We have over 10 years of artist interviews on our podcast site now. And with our gratitude toward KZUM for supporting us through all of those years of producing Art Talk Live. Julia Noyes started 5 years ago, and I took over, 10 years ago. I started about 5 years ago, and it is so fun to learn about the life and the work of Noyes artists and the things they do, the things they think about, their life, and notice that we're like regular people doing our regular thing, and I hope that you can find your regular thing too. With me today in the studio is Terry Martins. She is a sculptor here at Noyes Art Gallery, and looking at her, you would not think of the huge metal sculpture and welding that she does, and I'm so excited to visit with her about her work. It's very beautiful. Welcome, Terry.
Thank you. I'm so glad
you came by today.
It's great to be here, and everybody loves to talk about themselves, don't they?
Oh, yeah, right. Well, indeed. Let's just open up with your story. I know you interviewed about 4 years ago with me, and let's refresh everybody of where you're at now and the first time you thought of yourself as an artist.
Well, a lot has changed in 4 years. Of course, that was during kind of the height of the pandemic when I spoke with you before. And now we're on to other things. But I'm a girl, which in the medium that I use is not that common. Girls generally stick with painting and that kind of arts area. So when I first learned to weld, I think that's when I first thought of myself as an artist. And it really started in my welding class that I took. Actually, my husband signed me up for it, and I need to give him lots more credit than I do, because without him, I wouldn't have been able to do this, because the welding part of it, it's actually a very minor part of it, but it's the very expensive part of it. Because not only do you need, you know, the welding equipment, you have to have a building to put the welding equipment in. And if you want to work in the summer or the winter, that building has to have heat. And personally, I also like air conditioning. So yeah. Having all those things really make it so that you can do your art when you feel inspired. So my husband signed me up for a welding class because at some point I had mentioned that that was on my bucket list to learn to weld. And the welding class that he signed me up for, he also signed up for. He restores cars, and he wanted to learn to weld better. So we took this class, and it was an industrial welding class. So they weren't going to teach us to make flowers. I was the only girl in it, and really for about the first two or three classes, I just sat and did not say a word. They threw us right into the MIG welder, which is the automatic feed welder, and I just sort of bluffed my way through it. As they say, fake it till you make it, and I sort of didn't really know what I was doing, but I did it and figured it out. And then we started working on little projects that were basically taking two pieces of metal and welding them together, and then taking two more identical pieces of metal and welding those together, and then doing that again, and then doing that again. And to me, why are we continuing to do this same thing? Well, the guys in the class didn't think that was weird at all. But so I started bringing some scrap metal that we had at the house to class, and I said, well, can I go ahead and kind of do some welding on this? And the instructor was like, okay. You know, I'm sure he thought, well, this girl is weird. So while the men were still welding the bars together and the bars together, I was over there making flowers out of planter discs and things, because my family were farmers and we had some of that stuff. So I think that was the first time I thought of myself as an artist, mm-hmm. because I wasn't content with welding the bars together over and over and over. Mm-hmm. Well, the purpose of that was to improve your welds. Well, my welds were pretty good to start with.
Hey, how about that?
And the instructor told me that. You know, he said, your welds are really good. And we have since, that was in 2010. We have since become really good friends with this instructor. And he visits our studio several times a year just to hang out, see what I'm making, see what new cars my husband's working on, because he's always got a car project going. So that's about the first time I really thought of myself as an artist. I had always been creative in a crafty way. I had been involved in a bike business in the early 70s with my first husband. We had a bike shop, and I was a mechanic. I have an aptitude with tools, and I think that helps. Mm-hmm. So all those skills came together to create what I am today.
Yes.
So I think the moral of the story is never stop creating. And I did all this while I worked a regular, it wasn't an 8-to-5 job. It was an executive job where I worked many, many hours. 40 hours was just the beginning of the job. I traveled a lot and, flew quite a bit and had lots of after-hours meetings in different states and things. So I did it to kind of relieve stress, actually. It was a good stress reliever. Mm-hmm. I could have a bad day at work and come home and bang on some metal. So
there you go.
It was good.
That exercise always puts that adrenaline out there that we need to get rid of.
Yep.
Indeed. Yep. So you mentioned that you always had a good way with tools and that felt natural for you.
Mm-hmm.
As a child, what kinds of things did you do that you can see now maybe relate to your movement forward in life?
As a child, we spent a lot of time on the farm where my dad had been born, although we lived in the city. And we didn't have normal toys out there. There were some old bicycles and stuff, but we would like just take old wheels and we'd play with those and we'd, make up our games with those. And it was basically making up games without toys, and that's what my sister and I did, and all the times that we would spend there, because we spent quite a bit of time on the different farms, because my mom was from a farm and my dad was from a farm,
mm-hmm.
With our grandparents in the summers, and then we were down there quite a bit normally too. So
mm-hmm.
Other than that, when I was a child, we had to do a lot of work. We didn't get to just sit around and play our games on our phones and things like that, We had to help, with the garden work. We had to help washing the cars and keeping things clean. And so I think a lot of that you got handier because you handled the rakes and the hose, and when something broke, you if you didn't fix it yourself, you went and you watched someone else fix it, and you mm-hmm. saw that people fixed things. You know, we never had a repair person come to our house. Mm-hmm. That was not heard of. My father repaired everything.
Yeah.
Or my mother did. So I think that was a big influence on me as a child.
Yeah. That work ethic.
Yes.
That ability just to see that things can be fixed. Things can be worked on.
You didn't buy new. You fixed the old.
Yeah. And you didn't worry about if you knew how to do it or not first. It was tear it apart and figure it out.
Well, and back then, you didn't have YouTube videos that you go watch to right. figure it out. And that's really been a big help.
Oh, you bet.
So, boy, if my dad would have had YouTube videos to help. But he did okay. And, you know, there were lots of car manuals, and that's why they had the Chilton car manual system.
I see.
You could go look up any car and learn how to rebuild its carburetor. So,
uh-huh. Yeah. Well, that's a lot of experiences that you're sharing. And that's, as you said, maybe not in the skill set of what kids are learning right now. And it's different. So
today I think it's just, well, and it's a lot of how things are built today, too. They're not built to repair.
Yes.
They're built to replace.
Yes. Well, let's dig into your art, because that's what we love to see right now. And every time I see your work, I smile. I'm happy.
Good.
It's joyful. It has a funness to it.
Yeah.
It's playful.
It's fun to make.
Yes. Yes.
And I hope that that's what comes through. The materials that I use have kind of shifted over the years. Instead of using just mostly scrap materials, now I use kind of a combination of scrap metal and new metal. That kind of gives you some different options. You're not, with scrap metal, you are always having to take something apart to build something from it. And sometimes I have the ability to look at something, say a candle holder, and I can look at it and say, okay, I could use this part of it in something else, but I have to have the ability to take that part off without destroying it. And sometimes that is hard. So you have to have the ability in using scrap metal to take it apart without destroying it, and then having it be totally usable in the form that you're envisioning in your head. And sometimes that's hard. That was hard at first. So I've kind of conquered that. Usually I can problem solve my way through those issues. But using new metal really kind of gives you the ability, if you can't find it, you can make it. So if I can't find the specific shape of a piece that I'm needing, I can make it. And I have learned through the use of a lot of different tools, most of them I hadn't heard of 10 years ago, like the English wheel, which is just a big set of arms that come together, and you slide your metal through it, and it cups it. So if you were making like a fender for a motorcycle, if you think about what a fender on a motorcycle looks like, you would start with a flat piece of metal, and you would just roll it through this machine back and forth and back and forth, and it slowly stretches the metal, which our brains say, what? That doesn't make any sense. But metal is actually very malleable. In other words, it stretches, and then you can also shrink it back together. So while you're stretching it on one side, the underneath is shrinking. Mm-hmm. So that's how you end up coming out with a motorcycle fender, is you roll it through this English wheel probably a million times, mm-hmm. but you do end up with a motorcycle fender. So that's how you learn to shape things, and that's just over time you get that experience. And then my pieces have changed because I have that ability, not just using scrap but using a combination. So I do mostly animals, nature type. I do bird baths, I do trellises, arbors, just kind of things that have either fur or feathers or leaves, branches. I love to, metal can imitate nature so wonderfully. I made a railing for my back deck, and it's not very big, but I took pipe and I welded different sizes of pipe together, and I bent little twigs up, and then I covered it with kind of the lumpy weld that you see. And so many people think I have taken a branch of a tree and put it in concrete for my deck railing.
Yeah.
Because it looks exactly like a tree.
Mm.
And that's, to me, is just amazing that you can do that and fool people.
Yeah. Yeah.
So to me, the median is just amazing. The many, many different aspects of it that are available if you explore it.
Mm-hmm.
Take the time to explore it.
And you've talked about your growing up on a farm and access to reusing
mm-hmm.
old parts,
farm equipment. Yeah, that's where most people start.
And then also access to new materials. Is your eye just open all the time for...
Yes.
I'm going to pick that up.
Yes, my eye is open all the time. I go to a lot of, in the summer, garage sales. My husband, since he's a car guy, car guys have swap meets, and that's where they all get their car parts out, and they try to sell them to everybody else. And so I get a lot of stuff at those places. Some of it is car, parts, but not a lot. Those kind of people tend to bring all kinds of metal stuff, which is very strange. I mean, I've actually bought like light poles, like city light poles at swap meets.
They know you're coming.
I don't know. It's really odd, the things that you will find at a swap meet. But, so I keep my eye open, and I might actually see something in the trash at a garage sale, and I will ask about it. Hey, I see some rakes over there that you're throwing away. Do you want those? Because I'd take those off your hands.
Yeah.
So I get some free stuff, even.
Yeah.
So that's great.
Yeah.
And I figure if I can make a use of it, then it doesn't go to the landfill.
So can any kind of material be welded?
No. No. A lot of things have to be bolted on.
Okay.
So a lot of what I do is, I call it problem solving. It really has nothing to do with the artistic part of the process. The artistic part of the process comes first, where either some type of a metal shape that I've seen inspires me, and I think, oh, that looks like a chicken's body. So that's where I start. And then I look, and I've got an outdoor storage area, a huge racking system that's full of metal, and I've got one inside, and I've got one upstairs in our huge barn that we have. So I just kind of go through, and all of these things are in my head, kind of cataloged.
Mm-hmm.
So I just kind of go through all my stuff, walk around, look at stuff, and things pop up, and hey, kind of flag themselves in your consciousness, and I assemble things on my workbench, and pretty soon elimination of some things leaves a set of things, and then I have to fill in the parts that I don't have exactly what I need, and then you start problem solving. Some of it can be welded together, some of it cannot. It will have to be bolted together. First in that creative push, that's the exciting part, and I think that's what every artist experiences, is that first creative rush.
Mm.
I think that's what has kind of made Pinterest a popular place for people to go and kind of browse. You're getting just a little bit of that creative head rush as you scroll through Pinterest. But just think of what you would get if you actually did it yourself. It's the head rush is so much more intense when you do it yourself as mm-hmm. an artist. Mm. So after the initial rush, then comes the grueling work, as I call it. And sometimes it's difficult to not give up. But I always have the goal in mind of the vision I have. And I always swear to myself that you're going to get to the goal because you know what it's going to look like in the end. It's going to be so cool. Mm-hmm. And probably 98% of the time when I get there, I'm like, wow.
I did it.
It really turned out better than I thought it would.
This is Julia Noyes from the Noyes Art Gallery, and this has been Art Talk Live. I want to especially thank Lila Cho for her original violin composition that she did special for us. Tune in again. We'll be looking for you.